Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd Printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 252 of Heroes Unlimited, and we are discussing animal abilities. This is a big umbrella group of superpowers here in the major super abilities section, and after many, many days of discussion of superpowers that involve turning into different natural elements, we're now at last onto something different, powers that you gain from taking on the aspect of different kinds of animals. This is not animal transformation. We're going to get to that later. You don't actually turn into a bear or a tiger or a wolf or what have you. You're just kind of wolfy, kind of tigery, and this gives you abilities that you would expect. Now, animals, as you may know, if you've been reading your zoo books, as I have recommended in the past, they're badass. There's lots of powerful animals who have natural abilities well suited to crime fighting. The immense strength of the bear, the natural hunting prowess of the tiger or lion, the speed of the hoofed animal. Of course, we're really referring here to horses, but the category is actually hoofed, which means that if you were bitten by a radioactive sheep, you become a really good runner, just like by process of superpower free association. All individual animal abilities are pretty paint-by-numbers. They all do the same sorts of things, and it's fairly mechanically simple. So what I fixated on, first thing when I read this page, looking for something to talk about here on the podcast, was a category that I was going to make fun of. A category I was going to say was goofy, the category of fish. Oh no, criminals tremble at the name of Timmy Tuna, I was prepared to say, in my ignorance. Then, while doing my due diligence for the podcast, I looked up, just to make sure I wasn't wildly out of line, what is the world's strongest fish? Google, strongest fish. Now, fortunately, Google is a genius, and so Google was like, strongest fish. Well, I don't know about that, but would you be interested in the toughest fish? Because if so, may I direct you to an article from Outdoor Life magazine, the manliest magazine on the goddamn planet, entitled The Toughest Fish on Earth. And I was like, yes, please, Google, tell me all about it. So I went to this article from Outdoor Life, and I'm so glad that I did, because I learned some things about tuna, and about all fish, and about myself as a man. Namely, while, you know, gender is a beautiful spectrum, and I'm not trying to shame or disparage myself or anyone else, there is a traditional kind of masculinity, the kind of masculinity that inspires you to go out and try to fist fight with nature, by land or by sea. That kind of masculinity is not the kind I have or prefer, but it is a kind I am fascinated by, and I have found it in purest crystalline form in this article from Outdoor Life. This prose, my God, this prose. For those of you who are interested, you can look it up. It is Outdoor Life. It is entitled The Toughest Fish on Earth. Just listen to this opening paragraph calculated to make you fear fish. Quote, there are fish that ratchet the idea of toughness up to a rarefied level. A toughness that leaves amateurs and expert fishermen alike in physical and mental shock. These fish, once you are joined to them, and despite even the best of muscle tackle, will pummel you with a ferocity that will rubberize your legs, brutalize your belly, reduce your arms to trembling twigs. Your synapses will malfunction, and every muscle you own will screech, enough, but you'll be too stubborn to give in. Seriously, I'm not making this up. Once you are, quote, joined to the fish, it will pummel you. It will leave you in physical and mental shock. It will brutalize your belly. Motherfucker just jumped into the boat and headbutted me in the stomach. What? I'm scared of fish now. I mean, Outdoor Life is pretty optimistic. You'll be too stubborn to give up, will I? Because I don't feel that stubborn. Not while I'm being pummeled by fish. Anyway, this article proceeds to describe in loving, almost erotic detail, the difficulty of tussling with the ocean's baddest ass fish. And while some of this is just style, some of it is fact, I did learn, I'm humbled, fish are very fast, fish are very strong, fish are very tough. I'm on the point of thinking that Heroes Unlimited is actually underselling what fish are capable of. I'm sorry, I know I'm supposed to be talking about Heroes Unlimited, but I'm so fascinated by this article. You have to indulge me. What this article assures me is that there are a number of fish who are immensely strong, who If you could harness their proportional powers to fight crime, you'd be a real fucking beast. Because no man can match the power of these fish, although it's exciting to try. The author of this article is clearly excited to try, if you take my meaning. This is, in places it reads like a penthouse letter. This is like fucking Dear Outdoor Life. I never thought it would happen to me. Listen to this. Tell me this doesn't sound like the beginning of an erotic furry fanfic set on a fishing boat. Next to bluefin tuna, greater amberjacks are, pound for pound, as hard fighting a fish as you'll meet. Like tuna, they don't jump. But when one slams your bait, there is no question as to what's happening. No question. No question in my mind what's happening, for sure. That fish is about to get fucked. You think I'm exaggerating, but that's just the amberjack. That's only like something like the eighth toughest fish in the planet. This author is reserving his real love for the tarpon. Just listen to this fucking ode to aquatic rough trade. My undying love for these things is no secret. They remind me of the finale of a 4th of July fireworks display. There are times when they feel your hookup and come straight at you. Gills audibly rattling, mouth as big around as a Dutch oven, saucer-sized eyes glaring with a wild stallion craziness. Those are the good ones. The bad ones sulk and run. Oh, you like it when they run, don't you? You fucking pervert. Wild stallion craziness. This guy is in an unhealthy S&M relationship with the ocean. I'm concerned for his safety. But it's not all like this kind of funny pseudo-sexual stuff. Some of the style here is just like, I mean, these are some of my favorite sentences I've ever read about any topic, fish or any. Winners of the fish category, high in the running for best sentence in the world, in my opinion. I think it's because of the fishing lingo, which is just like active, hard-nosed language. I swear that I'm about to get back to Heroes Unlimited, but you got to hear this shit. This is still about the tarpon, the beloved firework fish that came straight at him when it felt his hookup. You can toss plugs to tarpon on glorified bass tackle with reels that have sufficient line capacity and splendid drags. Soak live mullet, tempt them with chunks of dead bait, troll for them or throw flies on their noses. The finest sport is sight fishing in shallow water, leading them like a wing shooter, firing home a cast and watching a mouth open. Soak live mullet? I mean, I know there's a literal denotation, but just the sound of it. Throw flies on their noses, lead them like a wing shooter, toss plugs. Over the course of this recording, I have grown a full beard. That's how manly this fucking prose is. But anyway, we got to talk about Heroes Unlimited. I'm closing this tab. Go look up this article. You'll love it. Here's the thing. I am prepared to concede that a bluefin tuna, per the Outdoor Life article, is unquestionably the baddest fish on the planet. The Ken Shamrock of the sea. What I'm not so sure about is the implementation in the Heroes Unlimited rules. Because while the other animals, like for example the bear, get linear bonuses, like straight constant bonuses to their strength or whatever other stat, like a bear gets a plus 1d6 to physical strength, somebody with lion powers or tiger powers gets a plus 1d6 to physical strength and a plus 2d4 to physical prowess, the fishy individual, your Timmy Tuna, doubles their physical strength while underwater. This is nuts. We've talked about the problems with multipliers before. We talked about this back with underwater abilities. And Timmy Tuna here gets multiple multipliers, gets a times 2 to physical strength while underwater, and also gets a swim speed equal to 5 times land speed. If you got fish powers and underwater powers, we're talking about a times 25 to your base speed. If you're also a fish alien, forget about it. Mystically bestowed? We could easily be talking about multiple times supersonic speed underwater. At that speed, diving out of the water and headbutting a manly fisherman, no fucking problem. You can jump into space if you want to. That's past escape velocity. That's like if you need a bigger challenge. If you're Timmy Tuna, heir to the vast strength of the bluefin heritage, and you're like, well, there's no challenges left for me on Earth. Time to go fuck up the fisherman in outer space. Splash, up out of the water, past the moon and out into the cosmos. But the speed honestly is not as big a deal as the strength. Because unlike speed, strength is something you can get huge bonuses to and hugely consequential bonuses to from other sources. There are a lot of heavy hitters on strength, right? There are giant robots. There are superpowered aliens. There's like over in Rifts, you got your dragons. You got your rock men. You got your giants. Everybody's kind of vying for like the highest strength score, the highest damage. But Earth's mightiest hero, bar none, is Timmy Tuna, at least potentially, because he can take the same kind of superpowers everybody else can, but he can double that strength when he's underwater. And I really don't understand the logic of this, because no offense to the bluefin tuna, which I fully believe could murder me and my whole family. no doubt a fish that could pummel and brutalize me in a way that certain fishermen I could name would enjoy watching. A masochist's dream is the harsh discipline of the bluefin tuna, but nonetheless, is a fish like multiple times as strong as a tiger when it's in the water? Is a tuna not just stronger, but much stronger than a horse or a bear? And speed too. I mean, if you've got hoofed animal abilities, so horse abilities, you get to keep getting faster every level, but nonetheless, for most of your career, you're slower running on land than Timmy Tuna, if he's got the running skill, is swimming underwater. And that's before any other multipliers. This exponential curve is just out of control, to the point that it's just goofy. Like, I understand in practical terms, it's not too big a power balance issue, because how many of your super fights really happen underwater? Well, the answer is, if Timmy Tuna's on the team, and let's be honest, I mean, the star of the team, the leader of the team, he's a fucking beast, then very well, many of your adventures may be underwater. He's got an NPC cast down there, probably. This is Aquaman syndrome all over again, except now when you go down there, it's all tuna all the time. It's like, stand back, Superman, stand back, Green Lantern. This looks like a job for Tuna. And he's right. He's so much stronger than other superheroes. Properly built, I feel like nothing can touch Tuna power. And he's fast. I mean, he's good at everything. I mean, the fish is the consummate animal combatant. No wonder it's out there having death matches with fishermen. It's hunting the deadliest game, because that's the only challenge on Earth for the tuna. With fish powers, you get a 98% swim skill. You can breathe underwater or on land indefinitely. You double your strength underwater. You can see in the dark. You add to your SDC quite a bit too, like almost as much as you would get from tiger or lion powers. You add to your physical prowess, not quite as much as a tiger, but more than, say, a wolf, almost as much as a house cat, and you can control other fish. Which, now that we know all this shit, that's maybe the scariest thing of all. I mean, shit, you got your hands full with Timmy Tuna. Now, underwater, with his buddies, you're in fucking Tuna Town, my friend. Get ready to get jumped. Listen to this. Yes, I opened the tab again. Listen to this. Big eye, dog tooth, long tail, even the black fin and little tunny are no quit fighters. But it's the top tier yellow fin and king of them all, bluefin tuna, that can, quite literally, break your heart. Per Outdoor Life magazine. Citation, Outdoor Life magazine. A tuna can literally break your heart. Okay, I need you to understand, we're talking about a 1,500 pound fish that will charge directly at you, into you, through your chest, destroying your heart and out the other side. That is what a tuna is, my friend. You don't need to be tangling with 14 of these guys on top of Timmy Tuna. Just leave. Just go. Fish another day. It's like an old friend of mine once told me about a Coke party that he invited me to that I did not attend. You'll be fine. Just, if anybody looks upset at you, leave right away. And that's how you should treat the ocean when there's tuna around. Yeah, the immense power of these fish abilities, it's just out of hand. Even conceding the vast power of tuna in nature, which is real, these multipliers, they're just out of control. And it would be one thing if this were like the power cosmic and it had multipliers so that other characters will never catch up with a well-built character who has power cosmic. That would be appropriate. But the fact that like the best strength build always has to involve fish powers, it's just goofy. It's dumb. But then I can't complain too much because it did introduce me to this article from Outdoor Life, which has just made my day. Ultimately, fighting a fish to the death is just a thing of joy. In fact, let me close today with a quote about the marlin, which, for your information, scores a 9.7 on the tough scale. If a marlin in the air doesn't bring a shout of primal joy from you, there's something wrong with your wiring. Or perhaps it's just that your throat's dried up from fighting the beast. True words. Really gives you something to think about. Today we're discussing page 253 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still discussing animal abilities. Yesterday we talked about superheroes who have the powers of fish and how goofy they are. Answer, not at all. Fish are terrifying. And today we're on to discussing some other categories of animals that a superhero might have a special affinity for. Here's the thing. These categories are slightly flexible, slightly arbitrary, I think for game balance purposes. For example, one of the powers you get is the ability to control animals of your type. But that type sometimes is not very useful, and so it is broadened. For example, let's say you have the canine powers, right? You're wolf lord. You can control wolves. You can control dogs. Makes sense. Same basic animal. Dogs and extra strength dogs. On the other hand, if you're a bear, while bears are cool, you may find that it's hard to round up a posse of bears to fight crime in the city where a lot of superheroism happens. And so we find under the bear animal abilities category, quote, can control 2d4 bears or dogs. You know, dogs and bears, they're basically similar. I'm sure this would surprise the dogs that you attempt to command. When you show up in, you know, your bear hide cloak, your superhero vest with the Ursa Major symbol on it, and you got to go after some bad guys, and you just point at some random dogs on the street and are like, after him. And they're like, I guess so. I guess we, they're just talking to each other as they run after him. Like, are we in the bear union? I guess we are. Some kind of affiliate arrangement? Who knew? And there's like no biological basis for this. It's just, what is the animal in a city that is closest to a bear that you could send to catch a purse snatcher or whatever? Now, for most of these animal categories, we've got a pretty coherent theme, a pretty coherent group of animals. The occasional dog in the bear area notwithstanding. You got your bears, you got your birds, you got your canines, you got two types of cats, domestic cats and big cats. But while domestic cat abilities only give you the ability to control domestic cats, big cat abilities give you all felines, so you don't need to wait until there's a tiger loose in the city to use your powers to the fullest. As a tiger person, you outrank all domestic cats. You got your fish, you got your hoofed animals, which is like a little vague, a little bit broad. And then here on page 253, though, you have the one bullshit category, nocturnal. One of these things is not like the others. Nocturnal is not a family of animals. Having the powers of nocturnal animals, it's like having the powers of spotted animals, or like the powers of animals who like peanuts. Too broad, too arbitrary, not allowed. But it is allowed. All the other categories are an actual type of animal, but nocturnal is just like for cool nighttime animals. That's why the physical traits that come with nocturnal abilities are basically just large round eyes. Everything else, you get a whole description of what you look like. Like if you got bear powers, quote, add 50 pounds to the weight, hands are thick with heavy short fingers, ears are small, the character is tough, husky, and bulky, yet nimble. So not only do you have great strength, and you can command bears and dogs, but you also look like Tor Johnson, because Tor Johnson was nature's compromise between a bear and a man. No such compromise is possible in the case of nocturnal animals. What physical trait could they name that would make you closer to looking like a wolf, a bat, a possum, and a leopard gecko, I ask you? And what powers can they give you that could possibly capture this huge diversity of animals? Bullshit powers, that's what. You get very strong vision, you know, just like a bat. I know that bats being blind is apocryphal, don't at me. You get night vision, you get an extraordinary sense of smell. So extraordinary, in fact, that it's at 40% plus 4% per level of experience to recognize common sense. Your wolf powers are so strong that almost half the time you can tell when bacon's cooking. Nah, I don't think so. As someone who has owned dogs, I can confirm you, sir, are no dog if you're missing bacon over half the time. You get a prowl skill, which I guess is pretty cool. You get some SDC because everybody gets SDC. You get a little bonus to physical prowess, and you get the ability to control 2d4 of any type of nocturnal animal, plus one per level of experience. This is the dumbest thing on this page. Here's why. Obviously, this is like Children of the Night powers, right? This is supposed to be wolves, bats, rats. This is supposed to be if you want to play the Bat Queen and you can boss around all the spooky animals of the night. But those spooky animals form a tiny subset of all the animals you can command with this power, many of whom are going to be more common, especially in an urban setting, than, you know, vampire-style Children of the Night. Like in any of the places where I've lived, you might catch a bat or two if you're the Bat Queen and you're in the middle of a tough fight. But if your back's really up against the wall and you put out the call to the Nocturnal Animals Union, I'll tell you what you're getting exactly. You're getting some fucking raccoons, and you're going to look pretty silly there with your big silk dress and your dramatic spider webs all over the place with a pack of grubby pod raccoons, Cheeto dust still caked on their little cheeks from rooting around in the trash fighting your battles for you. And this is even worse in reverse, because there are other animals who aren't really in these categories, but they are nocturnal. So if you want to be able to control or talk to them, you want to take nocturnal animal abilities. But that's going to open up the whole like nocturnal animals union to you. So if you're like not Bat Queen, but Gerbil Princess, and your whole thing is I'm into gerbils and I got a costume that's like a big habit trail that wraps around me and I just kind of like stick out my hand. There's maybe like a little pneumatic gadget in there and I just like poof, poof, fire gerbils at people. That's a very cute gimmick. And there's gerbils in people's homes. You could use them as spies and everything. But if you go on like a nature adventure or you're out in the wild fighting some savage monsters or some poachers or whatever, and you get jumped and you really need some help, and this is not a gerbil dense area, when you put out the call, you're going to get a fucking pack of wolves who will be as surprised as you are when they show up. They're going to be looking at each other like, I'm going to call my rep about this because are we in the fucking gerbil union? How did this shit happen? I'm taking orders from Bear Papa. I'm taking orders from Major Doggo, and now I'm carrying water for Gerbil Princess. Being a wolf sucks. What are we paying dues for? But there's nothing they can do. You had the misfortune to end up in her radius. Now you are subjects of Gerbil Princess. Now that I'm at the end of the recording and thinking about this, I feel like it's hamsters that are nocturnal and gerbils are like either diurnal or crepuscular, but whatever. You take my meaning. You're a superheroine whose thing is cute fluffy pets and you find out that you can command wolves. That's weird and off-brand for you. It sucks for the wolves and it doesn't match your crime-fighting style. I mean, if you were, let's say, the hamstress, let's introduce another creative new character into our ever-growing universe of stars. If you're the hamstress, okay, so you can call upon like coyotes at night in the city to back you up, to do your bidding. But what's your bidding? If you're out there commanding hamsters to go bedevil people, you don't want to sick coyotes on them. That's a little much for the hamstress. Probably you would call them just to tell them to sit there like, hey, hi, I'm the hamstress. I know it doesn't seem like I have anything to do with you, but weirdly, I am your mistress. I just need you guys to chill because I've been getting a lot of reports of neighborhood pets going missing. I feel like that's going to be you guys. Just hang out here. I put on a Roadrunner cartoon so you can see like some representation of your people. I cracked open some dog food and I just need you guys to hold it down here while I go fight crime in a cute way because the last thing I want is gaping coyote wounds all over these perps I'm trying to bust. You know, I didn't become the hamstress because I crave bloodshed. I'm just trying to protect my neighborhood, including my neighborhood pets. Thank you. I'll see you guys later. Once again, a raw deal for these coyotes. So the dumbest thing on this page is just the grouping of nocturnal animals all together in this way. It's silly thematically for the hero or villain who has these powers. It prevents you from being specific and getting like appropriately spooky with the children of the night theme. And it's just way too broad for commanding animals. The ability to command nocturnal animals, you know, from bats to koalas to white-tailed deer, it's just too much. Vastly more flexible than the comparable powers of the other animal abilities categories. Regardless of whether you're going for a cool hero or a dorky hero like the hamstress, I don't think this power is going to give you exactly what you're looking for. Today we're discussing page 254 of Heroes Unlimited. I got to give you a very serious content warning for positivity this episode, because I got to tell you, this page gets two big thumbs up from me. It's still dumb. Don't worry. We don't have to end the podcast. However much some of our families may wish that it were ending, it goes. The gods of Podcast Valhalla will not be denied, and I'm still doing the podcast, even though today I do love this page, but I love it because it's dumb. So if that's okay with you, then keep listening. Here's the deal. Today, we're still in the major super ability section. We are talking about bio armor. This is, again, one of those very 90s powers, and what it amounts to is you can summon this sort of cool-looking body armor all around you, and it just defends you like armor does. It's really good armor, it's really light armor, and it has a couple of little side benefits. It makes you resistant to certain kinds of damage, like heat and cold, gives you a little bonus to damage, and so on. All these stats are rock solid. The thing is, a power doesn't need to be super powerful to be good. Part of Heroes Unlimited that you just have to accept is that it is not power balanced in any way. So every power or type of hero really needs to be judged on its own terms. A major power is not necessarily going to be as strong as another major power, and that's by design. Sometimes you want to play a character who's got a lower power level. You got to judge the power according to, number one, is this going to be fun to play? Number two, does the power level sort of match the fiction? Number three, does this in fact do what it sets out to do? And here, I mean, granted, this is pretty hard to fuck up, but we've seen many instances at this point of things that seemed impossible to fuck up that were nonetheless heroically fucked before our eyes. Today, it works. The power works. The armor works. It's armor. But how important is the armor aspect of armor really? This brings us to the dumbest thing on this page. I submit to you that especially in the 90s, with fans who are obsessed with artwork, obsessed with cool character concepts and designs, obsessed in fact with the very idea of coolness. Those old superheroes with their primary colored underwear outside their pants, they're dumb, they're uncool. We want cool heroes. Being a cool hero often involves like metallic blades or chromed out guns or cybernetic arms or cool sleek armor that you wear, right? Tights are for losers. 90s superheroes wear armor and big fuck off metal shoulder pad things, pauldrons. Pauldrons and Pouches is the name of my 90s superhero RPG. Coming soon. Watch out on Kickstarter. Nobody gives a fuck that you can't be killed with bullets while you're wearing the armor. Superheroes can't be killed by bullets at all, at least not permanently. That's not the important part. The important part is the style. The important part is the look, the statement. And remarkably, wonderfully, ridiculously, bio-armor mandates and mechanizes this style over substance approach to armor. Basically, the whole two-paragraph introduction to this power before we get to the mechanics is full of not fluff, but crunch about how cool your armor looks. Let me just read you how it breaks down. Quote, "The exact appearance of the armor will depend on the mindset, personal taste, and alignment of the super being, i.e., those attracted to power may be big and bulky, others sleek and almost skin tight, while the armor of those with a darker nature may look menacing and covered with small spikes, etc." Nothing more menacing than small spikes. When I think of somebody wearing a lot of small spikes, for sure, I think of dangerous dudes, not like little bracelets you would buy from Hot Topic if you're a high schooler who thinks you'd probably be into bondage if you could ever get a date. But regardless of whether you are a big and bulky personality, or a sleek and skin tight personality, or a dark and twisted individual whose psyche can best be summarized by tiny spikes, regardless of all that, there are nonetheless rules you gotta follow. Quote, "The main body color, the majority of the armor, is one consistent color. Typically," and here we're gonna get a list of Kevin Sambita approved cool colors, to wit, metallic silver, gold, bronze, copper, molten red, chrome, pewter, light gray steel, medium gray steel, dark steel blue, blue-black, or black. So that's your menu of choices. As we all know, there are only so many personality types in human nature, right? Some people are gold, some people are bronze, some people are chrome. You may be thinking to yourself, hey, doesn't this armor reflect my inner nature? Like, shouldn't it be whatever color I am inside? Well, yes, and you're one of these colors. If you think you're not, then you're wrong. I can just hear you now complaining, objecting, like, well, what if I want my armor to be dark gray steel? No, fuck you. You need to do more introspection, because I think you'll find there are light gray steel people in this world and medium gray steel people in this world. There are no dark gray steel people in this world. Maybe you're thinking of dark steel blue. Could that be it? The rules here are very specific. Like the very first one, metallic silver. You think you're going to get away with bio armor that is silver colored, as in light gray, like silver hair? No, it's not cool enough. It's got to be metallic. Otherwise, it isn't cool enough. This power's got fail safes. So okay, that's the main body color. But you, look, remember, this is an expression of your inner psyche, your individual personality. You get to make choices about the details. Quote, "Additional highlights and markings are usually limited to parts of the body and or chest to create the illusion of gloves, boots, insignia, or stylish lines and patterns. These additional markings can be a different color than the main body, but never consist of more than two additional colors. Typically just one extra color or shade. Only you know the depths of your own psyche, especially if you're like a grizzled, complex 1990s comic book character. So if you say you need not just a black, skin-tight jumpsuit armor, but also molten red trimming, I believe you. You know, I respect your lived experience of molten red. That's cool. Chrome insignia? Okay, now watch yourself. You're starting to be too complicated, you know, reflecting your deepest recesses of your inner psyche is one thing, but at a certain point, the costume is just busy. We can't have that. One more color? Absolutely not. No way. Rein it in, Jack of Hearts. It's not the Bronze Age anymore. The only two hard and fast rules of this game. Number one, no neutral alignments. Number two, no more than three goddamn colors on the bio armor. All the great superheroes who are popular in the 90s with shiny outfits, pretty much two colors. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for you. So there's so much to love here. There's so much that's dumb here. Enshrining in the rules the idea that bio armor is too cool to have any color that is not like metallic and or crimson, it's so dumb. Limiting the number of colors you can use in the palette of your armor when it's meant to reflect your individual psyche and preferences, so dumb. I mean, like, the clear implication is nobody belongs in a 90s comic book story whose personality, if visualized, would consist of more than three colors, all of them shades of black and chrome. But I guess the fundamental dumb thing is to have a superpower so wrapped up in aesthetics, right? The whole appeal of this power, because it's not as powerful as, you know, being a rock man or being a titanium lady with alter physical structure, metal. It's not the power, it's the ability to draw your distinctive look and like summon it at will, like a badass 90s superhero, to then give rules about what you can draw. That's probably the only negative thing about this. But even that, I can't hold against it, because it is dumb in that wonderful way that Heroes Unlimited is sometimes dumb, where it is this wonderful synergy between the arbitrary whims of Kevin Sambita and the play experience of a kid picking up this book who might have had fun just drawing superheroes on binder paper, but they could do that anyway. This book gives them limits. If you want to play a cool superhero who can make badass bio armor, you got to follow Kevin Sambita's rules on what colors it can be and how many colors you can use and where the accents go. And within that, you can draw a badass superhero who you maybe wouldn't have drawn otherwise. So it's dumb, but I love it. Today we're discussing page 255 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the major super abilities section, and today we're discussing Bio Ghost, which is meant to be an edgy 90s power. You'll see these throughout the major super abilities section. We already saw Night Stalking in the minor super abilities section. We've talked about body weapons, which makes you literally edgy. But yeah, we've seen this before. Bio Ghost is another instance of a power that it's a superpower, but it's got a tragic drawback. It makes you into kind of like a vampire ghost. It's a horror trope twofer here because, well, I'll let the power speak for itself. Quote, characters with this strange power feed on the biological energy slash life force of others. Although potentially lethal, it takes many draining attacks to kill somebody. Here's how the power works. Whenever the bio ghost feeds, he momentarily becomes intangible, about 3 seconds, and can walk completely through living creatures, people, or animals, absorbing their energy. Actually, just turning intangible and sticking one's hand into somebody else will allow the character to drain the energy he needs. The character with the bio ghost power can become intangible at will, but only to feed. The momentary intangibility prevents most victims from fighting back and hurting their ghostly attacker. Note, this power does not enable the character to walk through walls or use the intangibility in any other way. So first of all, let's deal with the ghost half of this, right? Because you turn intangible, and this allows you to wave your ghostly arm through people and dine upon their very souls. Theoretically, the intangibility keeps them from fighting back. But actually, you only turn intangible for 3 seconds, and you can only use the intangibility to wave your arms through people. So you're not much of a ghost at all, are you? You can't walk through walls. You can't even walk through people if you're full and can't feed on them. More on that later. And you don't stay intangible long enough to keep them from fighting back. Not really. You're only intangible during the attack, and when it's their turn to attack, you're not attacking. It's the nature of the system. I mean, ghosts and vampires are both cool and all, but let's remember the primary point of Heroes Unlimited is to simulate a boxing match. And in a boxing match, you know, one guy punches, the other guy punches, one guy punches, the other guy punches, one guy runs out of actions, the other guy completes the melee round, taking a series of actions unanswered, although the other person can still do automatic parries. And we've all seen boxing, you know how it works. And during your opponent's unanswered flurry of punches, you're just standing there like a jackass, taking those body shots. It's not very ghostly. It kind of detracts from the horror, I feel, if a ghost comes up to you, not through the wall, but like through the door, you know, knock, 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 no answer. Open up, step on in, now I turn intangible and rah, pass my arm through you, and then go solid, and you're like, oh shit, a ghost, whack, sock to the jaw. And the ghost stumbles back and is like, ugh, I'm gonna pass through you so hard. It's not scary. Any ghost you can escape by locking yourself in the closet? Nah. So the rules do not back you up on your ghostly nature, but at least they make sense, until you start to go hungry. Because there are rules in this power for what happens if you don't pass through enough people. Because here's the thing, you're not just feeding on them to gain extra strength and speed, which is the main function of this power. If you feed a lot on people, you get bonuses. But you also need to do it just to eat, right? Like even if you're not interested in fighting crime, you got to pass through a couple people a day. If you don't, you'll start to feel fatigued and heavy, and eventually you will turn intangible. You're in feeding mode, you can't turn back tangible. However, according to the rules, you still can't pass through objects. So I don't know, like if somebody shoots you with a bullet, I guess you still take damage even though you're intangible because you're not intangible to bullets, just, you know, people slash meals. So what happens if you get locked in a room while you're in this kind of ghostly hunger malaise? You can't walk through walls with this power, but can you touch the doorknob to get out? Can you knock on the door? I really don't know. It's very unclear. So this is like one of the major drawbacks of this power, And, you know, drawbacks are essential to playing a monster. Why even do a horror superhero if you're not going to mope about something? But the rules here, sincerely, I mean, I know I often point out these niggling problems. Here, it is a severe oversight that we don't know, like, how intangible you are when you get stuck in intangible form. So, on all fronts, the ghost thing doesn't work. But that is of lesser importance compared to the vampire half of this power, because this is a weak-ass vampire. I got opinions about this, because unlike many people, you know, I know that many of my listeners actually started gaming with Palladium role-playing games. Most gamers probably started with Dungeons and Dragons. I first encountered games like, you know, Toon and the Marvel Super Heroes role-playing game, because my mom saw them in stores and was like, this is acceptable for my son. So that was like the gateway drug. Then I got into other role-playing games, and that's when I really entered my Palladium phase. But this was before I really had, you know those things, friends? Before I had friends. So I didn't really play Palladium games so much as I just sort of marveled over them and tried to decode them. But my first real tabletop gaming experiences with other people were with Vampire the Masquerade. And I always hated when a GM, I'm sorry, a storyteller, would try to take away my vampire experience just for their precious plot convenience. Like, I had a GM once who had the player characters, of whom I was one, working for this big badass vampire who would just drive us around to go, like, fight zombies or whatever the fuck was happening in that campaign. I'm sorry, in that chronicle. We would go fight zombies, and he would take us there in a limo, and the limo would be full of these, like, bags full of blood, and he'd be like, okay, eat up, guys. Don't want to waste a lot of time with you roaming around questioning your humanity, preying upon your fellow man in order to stave off the darkness. Just here, drink from this bag, then go have a superhero fight with zombies. And I hated that shit. As a vampire, I want to be dangerous. I want to be tortured. I want there to be serious consequences to both feeding and not feeding. And, you know, I want power that's attached to tragedy. That's what I'm here to explore. That's what I'm here to find out about. Look, I'm a straight white teenage boy, and I'm here to explore the fantasy scenario in which anything in life is hard for me. So to make this work, feeding's got to be kind of a drag, and I understand that that's difficult for a GM or storyteller, because it maybe detracts from the plot if you're a hack, but you can make it work. Anyway, this is not the Vampire the Masquerade podcast. We're talking about Heroes Unlimited, which is offering me a horror superhero who is like a superhero vampire. I have to feed on the life force, the very souls of my fellow human beings in order to do heroism, fight criminals, stop bank robberies. Sounds like a 90s-style moral quandary to me. So conceptually, we're in the sweet spot here, but it only works if it's hard to feed, if I am cursed with this unholy hunger, and if I therefore pose a danger to my fellow human beings, even as I attempt to save them, right? Woe is me, woe is you, woe is all of us together. But this weak-ass vampire here, they're no threat to anybody. Here's how it works when you wave your ghostly arm through somebody and consume a bit of their very soul. First of all, you do 1d6 plus 1 damage. That's like an average of 4.5 damage. That is, by way of comparison, more damage than being hit by 4 snowballs, but less damage than being kicked. Nobody likes getting kicked, but at the same time, I'm not, like, overcome by horror. So you wave your arm through somebody once, you do that kind of damage, and then you're, like, full as though you'd eaten a little snack. It's like a light salad. Then you gotta wave that arm through again to kind of complete the meal, fill up. I can go a few hours before I gotta feed on my fellow human being again. For those of you more comfortable with the salad scale, this would be like a nice hearty niçoise. At this point, the victim has taken about 9 damage. That smarts. It hurts as much as getting kicked twice. Now, you can only do your vampire ghost touch once per melee round, so it takes 30 seconds to feed on somebody twice, fill up, they took 9 damage. Now what? If you're gonna go have a supervillain fight, let's say, go do some actual crime fighting, if you're not just stopping off for lunch, then you're gonna want to supercharge, which you do by continuing to feed, one feeding per 15 seconds, once per round, with each vampiric touch inflicting 1d6 plus 1 more damage, and giving you a variety of bonuses. Each one after the first two gives you 1 physical strength, 5 points to your speed, 5 points to your SDC, and some other miscellaneous bonuses. Now you can feed up to 12 times every 4 hours. Once you've fed 12 times, you are fully supercharged, you're topped up. This takes 2.5 concentrated minutes of feeding, which maybe doesn't sound like a lot, but this definitely places bio-ghost vampirism on the lengthier end of lethal ways you can get attacked in an alley, right? Which is not where I want a vampire to be. In my real life, I might fear that I'm walking down some back alley late at night, a part of the city I've never been in before, and somebody jumps out with a knife and starts stabbing me, and then leaves me lying fatally wounded in the alley, and they run off into the night. Now, if you think about that happening, and you play out the scenario in your mind, and you start counting out seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's like a lot of stabbing, right? But this weak-ass vampire takes 2.5 full minutes to eat that soul. This vampire is nursing that soul, and that's not an exciting way to be attacked in an alley. So that's the first problem with this vampire attack. It takes for goddamn ever. Number two, it's not very dangerous. Now that's a problem because if you're afflicting someone with the tragic curse of vampirism, to get your jollies playing them in a superhero game, you want their attack to be dangerous. You want them to have to really weigh, like, oh, I've got important superhero things to do, but it means I have to attack someone. You're going to have people lined up around the block for feedings if you're a decent superhero and you've got this power, because it barely hurts. It's like being kicked. It's like, it's almost safe for anybody. One attack, a light snack, just to keep you moving. That's going to do 4.5 damage. Think about the weakest you can possibly be in a Palladium game. What if you roll a 3 on 3d6 for your physical endurance? You are sickly, feeble, probably chronically ill, barely able to function due to the human extreme of physical fragility. Your first level. This is a wasting affliction on someone who has basically no life experience or acquired toughness at all. Like a child or someone who's lived a totally sheltered, bedridden life. So they only get 1d6 hit points, first level. They roll a 1, because that's just their luck. Things are not going great for this person. So that's 4 hit points. Now, it says in Heroes Unlimited Revised that an average person has like 12 SDC. But let's assume much lower than that. This is a person who's never had any physical activity at all to speak of, other than rolling around in bed and weeping. They've never done anything strenuous. So let's say they have the absolute minimum, 1 SDC. That's 5 total damage they can take before they die. Even they would normally be all right if you just need a little snack. What kind of pathetic vampire attacks somebody in that state and then stands up like, what have I done? And the person in bed, this withered invalid, is like, actually, I'm fine. Goddamn, that's a weak vampire. And even if you need to fully supercharge, or maybe you don't even need the power, you just want to destroy somebody. You're full of vampiric rage, so you're like, I'm going to eat your whole soul. Let me just pass this arm back and forth through you for 2.5 minutes and just dig in. Over a course of 12 attacks, you're going to do an average of 54 damage. Now, here's the thing. It's clear mathematically, and it's even called out here in the text of the power. That's not doing shit to any kind of like supervillain or other superhero. I mean, 54 damage is a significant amount, but over 2.5 minutes, even a person with average strength and the most basic like self-defense combat training is outpacing you on damage there, just throwing feeble punches. But let's say you're not attacking like a threat or antagonist. You are attacking a victim. You are attacking some mook, some criminal. Let's return once again to the wonderful section of Heroes Unlimited Revised, the previous edition, that generates random criminals, right? Random mooks for you to fight. And let's just see. Let's see who's on the menu and see how effective your vampirism is going to be on them. All right, so we got a wayward young woman who I'm going to call Slick Cassandra Glick. She has just made some bad choices in life. She's like 20 years old. She's second level. She's aberrant, which means she does have a sense of honor, although she's a villain. She's got only a slight misdemeanor record, and she is a thug, according to the technical classification of criminals and mooks in this game. So I figure, you know, it's early college days for her. Maybe she played basketball in high school, so she plays college basketball, and the basketball team turns out to also be a motorcycle gang, and she gets mixed up with them. And now she doesn't really want to hurt anybody, but she's very loyal to the team. She has a sense of honor. So she's like, okay, well, let me go ahead and do crimes with you as well to like back up my posse, because teamwork's important. So I gave her athletics, pick locks, and pilot motorcycle for her elective secondary skills. Let's say you're a dread superhero vampire and you get pissed at her and you take it too far. And when you catch her in mid petty vandalism, you extend your ghost vampire mitts and start scooping her soul into your mouth, feeding upon her very essence. She has 14 hit points and 46 SDC for a total of 60 damage she can take. Typically, if you get average rolls as a vampire superhero, your little vampire belly is going to be full before you can eat her whole soul. It's going to take you 2.5 minutes. She's fighting you the whole time, kicking and struggling, and you're just like, oh, come on, I'm still eating. Let me finish. And then ultimately, assuming that she doesn't get away, after 2.5 minutes, you're standing there with your dread claws patting your belly like, look, Cassandra, I mean, it's embarrassing to say, but I am stuffed with soul. You know what? I might come back and hit you up later, finish this up, because I still feel a certain unreasoning rage towards you. But right now, honestly, I feel like I want to go take a nap. Just the weakest fucking... She's a mook. She's like one of 10 basketball players / motorcycle hooligans that you were supposed to fight in a big fight scene. And you picked her out to exercise your dread, tragic rage on, and you can't even finish one soul. The fundamental problem with BioGhost, the dumbest thing on this page, is that it does so little damage, and it requires you to feed so little. I mean, all it takes is like 4 feedings per day. Don't need to be from the same person, and you're fine. This really undercuts the tragedy of your vampiric condition, because all you gotta do is find one buddy who's like, hey, you mind if I kick you twice a day so I can live? So I can fucking survive and fight crime and save the world? And your friends are superheroes. They're gonna be like, sure, buddy, whatever it takes, right? We'll put it on a schedule like watchtower duty. Swing by around lunchtime, pass your hand through Booster Gold a couple times, and then, you know, when it's dinner time, then you can go by Wonder Woman's place. A couple of quick arm sweeps through. She's, of course, going to laugh that off. It's just as though you'd kicked her. In other words, she'll barely notice. And then tomorrow it's 2 different superheroes. Or the same superheroes. I mean, honestly, they'd be fine. You could do this indefinitely. It doesn't matter. Your vampirism is weak. I'm sorry to break it to you. Your vampirism sucks. Nobody's scared of you. And you have no problem setting up your life. And hey, guess what? If one day a superhero calls in to take the day off, then you know what? Go by the pet store and get a bag of feeder mice. And you know what? I know it's gross, but sweep your hand through them. Problem solved. It's not like you got to touch them. You're intangible when you do this shit. The supercharging aspect is kind of cool, but it's really much better for villains than it is for heroes, because as a hero, if you need to supercharge to go fight crime, it's going to be very easy for you to just ask some people if they don't mind, you know, let me vampire you, let me ghost you, bing, bang, boom, I'm all supercharged, I'm fine for a couple hours to go fight bad guys. It's a minor inconvenience in their day. And you got to set it up ahead of time anyway, because trying to supercharge in combat, I mean, you're talking about sacrificing 12 whole actions while you could be doing something useful to get these supercharge bonuses, and you're not going to be full up until 2.5 minutes into the fight. That's 10 rounds. If you've got a fight in a Palladium role-playing game with an opponent who's going to take 10 rounds to take down, keep in mind that is everybody in the party each taking like 50 actions, you know, do your fucking homework at home. Don't come to the fight, and once everybody's 50 actions deep, you're like, okay, guys, I'm ready to go. My vampire powers have finally kicked in. Let's get this fight started for real. You know, obviously the thing to do is, before the fight, just walk through a few citizen volunteers, take a couple minutes on that, and then come to the fight ready to go. So it's a better power for a villain, because they can, like, feed indiscriminately from people and rampage around town with their supercharged abilities. But even then, a dude with a lead pipe who works out and is wreaking havoc that way is much more of a threat to the citizenry than a vampire who's out there, you know, waving his feeble vampire arm through people, sucking out their souls at a painfully slow rate, as though he's doing it through like a coffee stir. It's just not scary. And that's the dumbest thing on this page for this horror superpower. Today we're discussing page 256 of Heroes Unlimited. We are in the major super abilities section. We're in the seas right now, and I want to tell you today a true tale of terror. I want to tell you about a superpower that will fuck your life right up. That superpower is cloaking. I don't think I can describe it in any more chilling terms than the text itself, so allow me to quote. The character is completely invisible to all forms of mechanical detection, photographic devices, and sensors, including radar, motion detectors, heat sensors, and cameras. That drop in the pit of your stomach that you feel when you roll this power for your superhero, that is the feeling of a life ending. Even back in the incomprehensibly primitive world of 1998, this was a death sentence. A waking nightmare that can only end in your anonymous demise. And the bad news is, it can't be turned off. Unlike other superpowers, cloaking is permanent. It's always on. There is no respite. There is no escape. With this power, with this air quotes power, you are a non-person in a modern society. I want you to think through the consequences. The dawning horror you would have if this mutant ability developed in your adolescence. You know, it starts small. Automatic doors don't open for you. Makes it tough to go shopping, but okay, I'll go around the side. That was a weird experience I had back at the door. Let me stop by the Starbucks, at the front of the store, grab myself a drink. Why is nobody coming to help me? Ah, there they are. Flag them down. Wave my hand. Sorry, sir, I didn't see you on our camera in the back, where we watch the front. Curiouser and curiouser. Let me just pay for this drink with my debit card, slide that into the reader. Nothing. Nothing. Why? Because, quote, range limitations of the cloaking power. self, and all possessions on his person. And remember, it can't be turned off. The things I hold also cannot be scanned or read by machines. Debit card doesn't work. Sorry, sir, I can't give you this latte. I'm going to go drink it in the back with my friends. You're left alone. You're shaken. What could be happening to me? You take a seat at the little tables out front of the Starbucks. Let me grab my phone and look up what could be happening. This phone doesn't seem to be responding to my thumbprint. It wants me to enter a code. Let me just boop, boop, nothing. It's not responding to my presses. Why? Because it's a touch screen. Now, physical buttons do work for you. So I guess if your campaign is set in the 1950s, then you'll be fine. But if it's set in the modern day, post-2007, the year the button died, you're helpless. You're adrift in this world. You might as well have no arms if you can't use a touchscreen. So the phone's not working. There's no one you can reach out to. You're freaking out. So you run to the nearest payphone. It's like in the next town over. Fumblingly, you push your quarters into the payphone. You struggle without your cell to remember your friend's number. You push it into the physical buttons. Ah, physical buttons. My only friends. You hear ringing on the line. Huzzah! Not all is lost. The entire world has not gone mad. Your friend picks up. Hello? Help, you say. I think I'm developing a horrible superpower. No answer. Hello? Hello, says your friend? Because the phone can't pick up your fucking voice, that's why. You drop the receiver, leave it dangling as you backpedal in horror, like people used to do in movies when phones had cords still, and you run. You don't know where you're going, you just run. You can't find a foot route to anywhere, because you can't get on Google Maps. Not in this, your personal hell. So you just run. You run down the street. You run through a parking lot. Bam. Backed into by an SUV, because it's one of those SUVs that's too gigantic to navigate it with normal human vision, and so they use one of those little monitors with the camera in the back so they can see behind the car, but you didn't appear on it, and so they didn't see you there, and they ran you the fuck over. You're bleeding beneath the wheel of the SUV, crushed by technology, truly an appropriate and symbolic and frankly merciful end to your cursed existence. Roll credits. This fucking power will ruin your life. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's probably maybe the worst thing you can roll in the game. Like, you can make a go of it with 3 physical endurance or 3 physical strength or 3 IQ. You can give it a shot if you roll 1 hit point. Like, sure, take physical skills. I mean, your SDC, you can get it up to like 70-something probably, even without superpowers. You'll be fine with low HP. There's only so bad a result you can roll. Clock manipulation? It's a terrible power. But if it's your only superpower, then adjust your mental expectations. Okay, don't think of yourself as a superhero. Think of yourself as a regular person who can do a weird, like, clock-based party trick and fights crimes with, you know, guns. Nature's superpower. You can adjust your mental attitude and manage this shitty role. Not so with cloaking. You are fucked. Just basic life stuff. Can't maintain a photo ID. Can't operate any kind of machinery that involves sensors. Which means essentially you can have no legal presence. Can't receive life-saving medical treatment in many cases because the machinery can't respond to you. The inability to turn this off is an unforgivable design mistake. And what do you get in exchange? That you don't show up on cameras and sensors. But let me just read to you, if not the dumbest, then certainly the cruelest thing on this page. Let me finish the sentence that I quoted to you earlier. The character is completely invisible to all forms of mechanical detection, photographic devices and sensors, including radar, motion detectors, heat sensors, and cameras. And then in parentheses, dread parentheses, appears as barely noticeable smudge or blur on the film or videotape. You do fucking appear on cameras. You appear as a blur, which means your only recompense for this undoubtedly short-lived existence of pure misery in our technological society, your only payback, the ability that you can sneak past security cameras and try to eke out an existence on the black market, off the grid, bereft of human contact, and legal recognition. That one ability to sneak into a secure installation by sneaking past the cameras, it doesn't fucking work if they know about your powers because they can see you as an ambulatory finger smudge on the footage. That's like the twist ending of the horror movie that is your life. They see you on the camera after all and they gun you the fuck down. And you lay there bleeding out. You pull out your phone and you think, who would I even try to contact in these last moments of my life since I've been unable to forge human connection since you can't use any telecommunications devices? But nonetheless, you pull out your phone and with your dying breath, you're like, Siri, Siri, call. No response. Siri, why have you abandoned me? Because of your curse. Because you were born to be ignored, unheard, locked out, latte deprived, and ultimately killed by the same technology that has made your life a torment. Good night, sweet prince. Just a little ill-timed side note here at the end, because I feel like that was, you know, the ending of the episode for sure. But I just want to point out, the rules do also say that a number of specific devices don't work in you that you would maybe think would, like metal detectors, which I guess can't pick up metal objects that you're carrying, and lie detectors, which test like a very tangible tactile skin response. or analyze your voice, as do some of the lie detectors available in the equipment section. So apparently, nothing voice-related will work for you when it's technological, and even devices that physically touch you, if they have to like send any signal, if it's anything more than like pulling a lever or pushing a button, it straight up won't work to detect you. So we're talking about an intense level of invisibility to technology. Like, you can't check your blood pressure with that little cuff, probably. The nurse is like, I'm sorry, but scientifically speaking, there's no arm here. Just had to throw that out before we get into a fight on Twitter about things not being so bad for this character. They suck, believe it. Today we're discussing page 257 of Heroes Unlimited, and I'm coming to you with an urgent public service announcement, a safety warning. For those of you who rolled or have selected the superpower we're discussing today, Control Elemental Forces, Earth. As I mentioned yesterday, Control Elemental Forces is a whole family of superpowers, and we're going to be talking about a couple of these at least as we go. Each one of these powers grants command over one of the classical four elements, and these are big luxury suites of powers. This is like a premium powers package, each one. It gives you all kinds of little abilities you can use. Like with Control Elemental Force, Air, which we skipped because I was busy being dumbstruck by the horror of cloaking, you can do a gust of wind, you can change the weather, you can create an air bubble underwater or to keep poison gas away from you, you can hit people with lightning, that classic retort to people who think wind is a dumb power, you can make fog if you need some fog cover, you got all kinds of different options. And this may lead you, perhaps, to a certain cockiness, you know, I am the lord of one of the classical elements, I am a triple omega level mutant, a platinum member of the Homo Superior Value Club, and, you know, who can stand against me? But, like every comic book character who has ever said, who can stand against me, you may not be as invincible as you think. Here's what you get with Control Elemental Forces, Earth. And we're only dealing with a few powers here today because we're going to be hitting this power again next time. But even on this page, it's pretty impressive. You can hurl Earth. Quote, the character can actually cause chunks of Earth to raise up and then hurl them at a target at speeds of approximately 70 to 90 miles per hour. You can do up to a 50-pound chunk, and a rock that big does like 2d4 times 10 damage. That's an average of 50 damage, which, as we know, is roughly equivalent to having your soul eaten for 2.5 minutes. And it happens in an instant. You think the destruction of your life force is painful? Try a 50-pound chunk of concrete to the dome. That hurts. If you're feeling a little less violent, or if you're feeling cheeky and you want to taunt your hapless opponent, you can use the Tower of Earth ability to raise a tower of stone or dirt or whatever under your foe and strand them up in midair where they theoretically can't get at you. You can put them 12 feet in the air, plus an additional 6 feet per level of experience. They do get a save, but they're minus 10 because it's so surprising. And I'm for this penalty. I mean, it's difficult to cope with the Earth moving underneath you. I know, I'm from California, that shit's disorienting. You feel some movement, you hold on, you get your bearings. Before you know it, you're now 12 feet in the air with some asshole Lord of the Elements laughing at you. Assuming you're fighting a supervillain. If you're fighting a player character, then obviously what they're going to do is build the tower all the way up and then immediately dispel it and drop you on your ass. And the rules provide for that too. Good job, Heroes Unlimited. You understand player characters. But this is where we begin to see that not all is well with this power. There are small inconsistencies. The falling rules presented here are different from the falling rules presented elsewhere, because there are general falling rules. There is a certain amount of damage you take from a fall, but these rules contradict it. Now, the math is almost the same, but the actual rules are different. So you will do a little less damage to people dropping them 18 feet than you would from dropping them down any other 18 feet. Curious. It's almost as though the rules that I'm used to don't quite apply when I'm using my elemental shaping power. The earthbending PC might think to himself, but no matter. I am the lord of the very earth. These small inconsistencies, they are of no importance. Once again, you gotta watch out for what you say in a comic book. That is of no importance. Comic book rule number one, that shit is of importance. You know it as soon as the words come out of their mouth. So alright, even though your offensive powers are slightly wonky, nonetheless, if you have control elemental forces, you're probably going to feel that you're hot shit and you don't have too much to worry about. But let's say you do end up on the back foot. Let's say you do end up on the run. You know, the tide of public opinion can turn at any time. Maybe after 10 years of service to the community, telekinetically hurling apart roads, collapsing bridges, and assaulting street criminals by repeatedly dropping them 2 stories onto the bare earth, maybe the public turns on you for no reason, and now everybody's after you. Maybe the police come at you, weapons drawn. Or maybe somebody tries to drive a car into you. Or maybe they're hunting you down and you're running out through the woods and they send attack dogs after you. Regardless, you're probably going to turn to your primary defensive power, Wall of Earth. Quote, the super being can create a wall that's 20 feet long by 12 feet high by 3 feet thick. And depending on the substance you have at hand, remember, you can't create substances with control elemental forces powers. You just alter them, control them. So depending on what earth you have at hand, this giant wall you can create, it's a good wall. I mean, let's be honest. It's a fantastic wall, probably the best wall. I'm not even going to go down that road. A rare aborted joke on Mega Dumbcast. This is a safe place. It's a daily podcast. You're about to go to work. You don't need to be bringing that shit up. This wall, if it's made of dirt, if that's all you have to work with, it's going to have an AR of 10, 200 SDC, all the way up to if you've got stone to work with, if you're already standing on a mountain or, I guess, on asphalt or on a stone wall, then this wall is going to have an AR of 15 and 400 SDC. Pretty good for something you can just pop up at a moment's notice, 20 feet long, 12 feet high. It's going to take the edge right off whatever's coming at you, right? Not so fast. There are special rules for this wall. Quote, all attacks strike the wall and do full damage to its SDC. A roll that is higher than the AR will go right through the wall and may hit somebody or something behind it. That is decidedly not how armor rating is supposed to work, but in this case it does, which means if you're using this as your main defense, effectively you are transforming your life into a survival horror video game. Because what's going to happen is you're getting chased by those dogs through the woods. You turn around. You use Wall of Earth to raise a wall of stone because the forest is on a mountain. Forgot to mention. This thing's got 400 SDC, so a dog runs up to it, starts pawing at another dog, you know, it comes up too fast. The dog jumps into it and collides with the stone wall. Then here comes lucky doggo number 3, rolls a 16 to strike, and crashes right through that motherfucking wall of stone into your face. Surprise, asshole. So much for your hubris. The power of the earth is nothing compared to the power of 1 in 4 dogs. Because assuming dogs have no bonus to strike, all you gotta do is roll a 16 or higher on a d20, and you're crashing right through this wall, whether it's made of dirt or clay or solid rock. All it takes, a 16 on the strike roll. Maybe you're up against somebody with kinetic energy powers, and it's winter, and they're not even trying to hurt you. They're just fucking around. So they make a snowball, and with their kinetic energy powers, they huck it at you. And you're like, ho ho ho, winter hijinks. You raise a stone wall in front of you to block the snowball. No, no good. Crash. Through the stone wall comes the snowball, right into your face, along with, you know, stone fragments. Now, I'll grant you, attacks that go through the wall get slightly reduced damage. So the good news is that snowball isn't going to hurt you. Not an SDC, which you probably have plenty of, but it may just hurt your ego, which may be in for a rough time over your superhero career. Aren't you supposed to be the master of the earth? Aren't you supposed to be this big stone-lobbing, invincible badass? But instead, here you are, in every battle, living in fear behind your stone wall, your solid stone wall, that anybody, supervillains, mooks, attack dogs, regular-ass people, bystanders who don't like you, will punch through that solid, 3-foot-thick stone wall like Hercules, grab your collar, and pull your ass through the hole. Who wants to live in terror like this? So, my advice to you, just a safety tip. You don't want to fuck around with this wall. Yeah, it only takes one attack to raise, if you can get it up in time. I mean, you might have to make a parry roll, or an initiative roll, apparently. And if you roll well, then it might work. But why risk it? They're coming. The dogs are coming. You gotta get out of here. Putting up this wall is just asking to be zombie grabbed, like in Night of the Living Dead. It's a bad scene. It's traumatic. Imagine you're going about your business and a dog jumps through a wall onto you. You'd be terrified of dogs for life, or of spiders, or of ghosts, because that's how phobias work in Heroes Unlimited. It's a random system. So don't risk it. Know your limits. Be safe. The dumbest thing on this page is that this wall of stone, it's not worth a damn. Don't trust it. And preferably, as soon as you see a threatening-looking dog, just throw 50 pounds of concrete at it. It's the only way to be sure. Join me tomorrow as we put the shoe on the other foot and discuss what's scary about your earthbending powers on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.